Gentlemen, this is Division 7 of the Court of Appeals. We have three cases set for this afternoon. We'll begin with the case of Attorney's Title against Bronchick. I see that counsel are set up and ready to go. Thank you very much. Mr. Krumholz.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. My name is Peter Krumholz, and I represent the appellants in this case, William Bronchick and Mile High Title and Escrow. This appeal boils down to a simple proposition. A mistake through inadvertence and confusion does not constitute gross negligence. The case law and treatises establish that gross negligence is vastly different from ordinary negligence. Thus, the Colorado Supreme Court stated in White versus Hansen that gross negligence is conduct that is so aggravated as to be all but intentional, by which the court meant conduct that is so aggravated as to be very nearly intentional. Here, the trial court erred in concluding that the conduct of Mile High Title was grossly negligent. In regards to the gross negligence finding, I think it's important to discuss the standard of review. Mile High Title is not asking this court to overturn the trial court's findings of fact. This is purely a question of how the law of gross negligence applies to the facts in this case. That question is reviewed by this court de novo. We are not arguing that there is conflicting evidence and that you should substitute your judgment for the judgment of the trial court. In fact, we're not asking you to disturb in any way the trial court's findings here. We are contending that in light of those facts, the trial court erred in finding gross negligence. This is a legal issue.
I want to see if I understand this correctly. On page 3 of your reply brief, you indicate that you are not challenging the legal standard applied by the court. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So, but you are challenging the finding under that legal standard that there was gross negligence.
Correct.
So as I understand your position, it is that under these facts, there could not be a finding of gross negligence.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But why isn't that a factual determination? You're saying, in essence, you're entitled to a directed verdict.
Well, this is an issue. Well, this was a trial to the court.
Right, but the equivalent of a directed verdict, there's just no, I mean, under your rationale, you would have been entitled to summary judgment. You're essentially saying, take all the evidence that was presented at trial, under all this evidence, under any view of it, there's no gross negligence.
I understand your point, and I think it's correct, Your Honor. This is about the application of law to a set of facts. And my point is that this is purely an issue of law and therefore a de novo issue on which you need not defer to the trial court. As I said, the treatises and case law stress that gross negligence is such a departure from ordinary negligence that it is different not just in degree but in concept. Thus, White versus Hansen observed that gross negligence is so aggravated as to be all but intentional or very nearly intentional. Prosser and Keaton observed that the difference between ordinary negligence and concepts like gross negligence is a difference in the degree of risk, but that difference is so great as to amount to a difference in kind. In short, gross negligence is conduct that is so close to intentional that it very nearly is intentional. And this explains, I think, the somewhat confusing definition in Black's Law Dictionary that was quoted by the Supreme Court in White versus Hansen. That definition is the intentional failure to perform a manifest duty in reckless disregard of the consequences. Now, I'm still puzzling through that definition, Your Honors, but I believe what it means is that gross negligence is an intentional failure to perform a duty, not with a specific intent to bring about a specific result, but rather of an intentional failure to perform a duty with a reckless disregard of the consequences.
Well, Mr. Krumholz, but how do you reconcile that with the language that the Supreme Court used, that it's all but intentional? Doesn't all but intentional mean that it's not intentional? It's nearly intentional?
This is precisely why I said I'm still puzzling over it, Your Honor, because I agree. White versus Hansen, I believe, also says that gross negligence is somewhere between ordinary negligence, and an intentional act.
Well, so, I read your brief as pushing more on the intentional rather than the all but part. And frankly, I'm concerned about that because what you're taking is just a quotation in a footnote to Black's Law Dictionary that talks about the intentional part, and that wasn't the Supreme Court's holding.
Well, Your Honor, to clarify, and I would agree with that, that wasn't the issue really that the court was addressing at all. I mean, White versus Hansen provides a definition of gross negligence, but the issue in White versus Hansen was not whether or not particular conduct constituted gross negligence. So I concede your point in that regard.
There's a lot of other appellate law that indicates that it's all but intentional, and it's not intentional. So I'm having a lot of trouble understanding why you're pushing the intentional part and not the all but part. It sounds like what you're really saying is that the trial court had to determine whether it was intentional or not, and we have to determine whether it was intentional or not.
Well,
explain the razor-thin difference that you're telling me.
I'm trying, Your Honor, and I apologize to the extent I'm not doing it to your satisfaction. But I think the point to be taken from all of this case law is that a simple mistake through inadvertence or confusion is not gross negligence.
But the testimony here was not that it was a simple mistake. It was that it was a gross deviation from the standard of care. Why does that not meet the all but intentional piece?
I don't think that was the testimony, Your Honor. If you look at Mr. Sands' expert testimony, he says it was a significant departure from the standard of care. That's the phrase that he used. That is not the same as the phrase extreme departure, which the trial court used and which all parties agreed was a proper definition of gross negligence.
Well, here's the language that Mr. Sands used. He said it was grossly wrong, a gross error, outside the scope of normal error, grossly negligent, and a significant departure from the standard of care. Now, why does that not meet the requirements of White?
Because he also acknowledged, Your Honor, that with respect to the title research report, which is undisputed, omitted one of the deeds of trust, with respect to that incomplete title research report on which Mr. Brewer relied, Mr. Sands acknowledged that but for that incomplete title research report, the error probably would have been avoided. So Mr. Brewer understandably made a mistake having relied on an incomplete title research report. We're not contending that he wasn't negligent. I don't think there's any room for that argument. But there is room, Your Honor, for an argument that but for the particular circumstances of this case, the error would not have occurred. This is not a case in which Mr. Brewer received a title research report which correctly identified both deeds of trust, and that he nonetheless failed to include one of those deeds of trust on the title commitment. If we had that, I'm willing to concede that if we had a correct title research report on which Mr. Brewer received, I'm willing to concede that it would have been grossly negligent not to include both deeds of trust correctly identified on the title research report in the title commitment. But that's not what we have here.
But it's also undisputed that the correct documents that he needed to read were attached to that, right?
And no.
All the information was there.
Well, a couple of things. I think there's an important distinction. The cover sheet did omit the deed of trust, and in addition, that omitted deed of trust was not included in the backup documents.
Right, but there were references to it from which he could have discerned that it was there.
And I would agree that that's what the evidence showed, Your Honor. That with further examination, that second deed of trust would have been discovered. What I'm saying is that the circumstances were such that Mr. Brewer's oversight here was perfectly understandable. Perhaps not reasonable, but that does not establish gross negligence.
Well, help me out here as to why you're not asking us to do a determination of fact. It's up to the trial court to determine whether that those facts that we all know of were sufficient to meet the standard of care or not. He had testimony from which he could have discerned that it was a even though the witness didn't use the phrase that I used, gross deviation from the standard of care, that's certainly between the lines of what he is saying.
Well, I understand your point, Your Honor, and I respectfully disagree. I think this is an issue of a set factual record over which there is no dispute, and a standard set of a governing law, which I don't think is in dispute here. I mean, if you look at paragraph C of the trial court's order and judgment, I don't disagree with a single sentence of paragraph C in which the court recites the governing law. Our argument is in light of the facts of this case, the court erred in concluding that those facts constituted gross negligence. I want to quickly move on, Your Honors, to the contract interpretation issue. Of course, we stress the gross negligence issue both in our briefs and here, because we acknowledge that if we lose on gross negligence, the contract interpretation issue is moot, because under either interpretation, if there is gross negligence, ATGF is entitled to recover. So it's sort of a 7-10 split here. We've got to knock one pin down to get to the other. But with this issue of contract interpretation, I wanted to really quickly go over the issue. If you look at Section 5 of the agency agreement, as written, it first defines what a loss is, and then in the very next sentence, it provides that for any loss occasioned by gross negligence, fraud, or intentional act, the underwriter is entitled to the amount of the loss, including attorney fees and costs. Now, it's our contention that what the trial court did here was add another provision that's not in the contract. The court effectively wrote in another provision, which is that where a loss is not occasioned by gross negligence, fraud, or intentional acts, the underwriter is entitled to the amount of the loss, excluding attorney's fees. Now, our argument is that the contract simply doesn't say that. And in adding in this additional provision, our contention is that the trial court violated two basic principles of law, that a court may not rewrite a contract to arrive at a strained interpretation, and a court may not interpret a contract in such a way as to render any of its provisions meaningless. And one of the provisions here is that Section 5 is entitled Division of Loss. And under the court's interpretation, there is no division of loss, because any loss will be attributable to the agent and not to the underwriter. I see I have just a couple of minutes left, Your Honors, and I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is David Yoon. I, along with Stacy Carpenter, represent Attorney Title Guaranteed Fund. Mahal parties admit that the central issue on appeal is the finding regarding gross negligence. And Mahal parties also agree that if the court rules against them on the gross negligence issue, that all the other issues are moot. Therefore, I'm going to focus today on the gross negligence issue. We disagree with counsel's statement that it is a legal question. As Judge Jones pointed out in the reply brief, the counsel admitted that they agree with the court's definition of gross negligence in this order. So this issue is the application of that undisputed law to the facts in this case. And we submit that is a factual determination, and that it has to be reviewed under the clearly erroneous standard of review.
Counsel, excuse me, do you have authority for that proposition in your brief?
Yes, on our legal argument, we say the interpretation of the contract is de novo review.
But the court's factual finding is under the clearly erroneous standard.
But you have authority for the proposition that the application of well-established law to a set of facts is reviewed for clear error and not de novo?
Not precisely in those terms, but I believe I'm trying to address exactly what he was arguing. I believe that is what it is. If the law, if we all agree on what the definition of gross negligence is, and if you're applying that and seeing if the facts meet that definition, that is a factual determination, I believe, Your Honor. And do I have a case on point that I cited? I do not off my top of my head.
Okay, and the reason I ask is I'm of the understanding that in the normal course of events, the application of a legal standard to a set of facts is a question of law that's reviewed de novo. So that your position on that is contrary to my understanding.
Well, I think maybe we are disagreeing with the term.
Okay.
But I think what you're trying to do is whether there is enough evidence to meet the definition of their definition, which is a intentional failure to perform a manifest duty. Our definition is an extreme departure from standard of care, regardless of the differences of opinion as to what that means. I would submit to you that the record in this case supports both definitions, and that, I'm saying, is reviewed under clearly erroneous standard. And as this court knows, under the clearly erroneous standard review, all of the facts are reviewed as a whole and in the light most favorable to the prevailing party. And as this court knows, it is within the trial court's province to determine the credibility of the witnesses, the inferences and conclusions to be drawn from the evidence, as well as the weight to be given to the evidence. In other words, this court, under the clearly erroneous standard, is not substituting itself as a trier of fact, but simply determining whether there is some competent evidence to support the trial court's finding of gross negligence. And I would submit to you, Your Honor, the trial court found that Mr. Brewer, who was a licensed attorney, who was a licensed title producer, and second in command at Mile High Title, was grossly negligent in failing to account for the senior deed of trust, while saving senior deed of trust. And this finding is supported by expert testimony and even Mr. Brewer's own testimony and his termination. As Judge Terry mentioned, John Sands opined that the failure to account for deed of trust in the commitment was more than a simple negligence. It's grossly wrong. It's outside the scope of any kind of normal error. It's grossly negligent, in my opinion. And that was admitted without objection from opposing party. He even went on to say, if Brewer actually reviewed the NED and still failed to account for the missing deed of trust, his conduct would appear to be intentional. Kim Walter, the general counsel, vice president of attorney title, as well as a licensed title producer, testified that attorney title usually don't bring seek reimbursement for an error. However, in this case, he felt that the error was such an egregious failure to perform our expectations as an agent based upon all of the information. That's why the lawsuit was brought. And then upon learning of the error, Mr. Brewer had a voicemail message where he called the situation a fiasco and that he was having about the worst day of his life. And after this error was discovered, Mr. Brewer was terminated. And it is also undisputed that his termination was in part caused by this erroneous commitment. Those are the facts. And then they argue that, well, our expert testimony is insufficient because it was really talking about the consequences of the error. And we submit that that's not true. The expert testimony was based on the fact that the duty was such a basic standard duty for a title producer, as well as the ease of finding and accounting for the deed of trust. Mr. Sands said, I mean, quite honestly, it's so easy to know, to look at this thing and know that you need to look at these instruments to anybody in the title industry. Honestly, this should not be difficult stuff. And then I also want to talk about specific duties that Mr. Brewer owed and how he failed to perform those duties. First of all, nobody disputes that Mr. Brewer owed a duty to review this title search report that he received. Nobody disputes that completely. And the deed of trust that Mr. Brewer actually missed was actually listed on the summary page or the cover sheet of the title search report. It was the second entry in the summary page. In fact, the first two pages were attached of the actual deed of trust was attached to the summary page. And as the trial court found, a cursory review of these supporting documents and the NED would immediately reveal that there were two deeds of trust from Ohio Savings. And Mile High parties even admit in their opening brief, page 19, quote, "It is true that the backup documents attached to the summary report contain the information that Brewer could have used to discover the second deed of trust. Therefore, Mr. Brewer failed to perform a duty that he clearly knew he was required to perform."
Mr. Yuen, let me interrupt for a moment. I want to get at this all but intentional language from White. What needs to be shown in order to show that something is all but intentional?
Well, I think I will go down to the definition. I think the evidence supports all but intentional as well. But we would submit that under Colorado law, gross negligence is anything more than negligence, but less than intentional. That's what Your Honor mentioned. And I believe Colorado recognizes a wide range of conduct. And I would submit that if you fall within that range of conduct, that is gross negligence. And in this case, I was going through the evidence to show that it meets either definition. The differences in opinion doesn't matter because the record in this case supports both definitions. But if you're asking me about the definition, I think under Colorado law, we don't have a specific definition, and that is why it's so difficult to pin it down. It's amorphous. We know that it's more than a simple negligence and is less than intentional. And I think Prosser and Keaton, if you look at the Prosser and Keaton, it actually talks about the difficulty. And I think the court, Prosser and Keaton said, and let me quote it for you, "Gross negligence, when that phrase is used, signifies more than ordinary inadvertence or inattention, but less perhaps than conscious indifference to the consequences." So I believe if the facts support somewhere within this wide range, that you satisfy the definition. And in this case, we would submit that the evidence, especially under the clearly erroneous standard, certainly justifies affirmance of the trial court's detailed findings of fact and conclusions of law in this case. And so I also want to just point out some other duties that Mr. Brewer failed to accomplish. Mr. Brewer had a duty to examine the notice of election and demand to determine whether or not, to determine what was being foreclosed. Everyone, including Mr. Brewer, testified that a title producer owes a duty to examine the NED carefully by comparing the reception number listed in the NED to the reception number listed on the summary. This was a basic standard duty for a title producer. And Brewer, Bronchek, Walter all testified that Brewer would have discovered the senior deed of trust if he compared those reception numbers. And therefore, Mr. Brewer did not perform a duty that he admitted that he should have performed, which is review the NED carefully. Another duty he owed. He owed a duty to review each document encumbering the property, whether or not it's listed in the title search report. And this is duty specified in the agency agreement as well as stipulated facts. And Mr. Brewer breached this duty because he said in his testimony that he didn't obtain a copy of the deed of trust that was listed in his in the NED. He testified he did not obtain a copy of the deed of trust listed in the NED, even though he agreed that, quote, when you have an NED that's referencing a deed of trust, you should obtain a copy of that deed of trust, close quote. He even testified that obtaining a copy of the deed of trust would be helpful. Based on his own testimony, Mr. Brewer failed to perform a duty that he knew he should perform to obtain a copy of the deed of trust that was actually listed in the NED. And finally, he also had the purchase agreement. The purchase agreement, as the trial court found, clearly identified two loans, one, a home equity loan and a mortgage loan that were in default. And that those two loans were issued by Ohio Savings. And as the trial court found, this purchase agreement would put any reasonable title insurance producer on notice that there were two loans from Ohio Savings. But we know that Mr. Brewer did nothing to further investigate whether those two loans were referencing two deeds of trust. Therefore, we submit that, again, Mr. Brewer failed to perform a duty that he knew he should have performed. Therefore, regardless of the definition this court adopts, which there is ample evidence in the record to support the trial court's finding of gross negligence. There's ample evidence to support an intentional failure to perform a duty, as Mahai proposes, and an extreme departure from ordinary standard of care. And viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to attorney title, and viewing the entire record as a whole, we submit that the judgment ought to be affirmed. And we request, as we did in our brief, pursuant to CAR 39.5, additional attorney fees incurred on appeal.
I'd like to address one point raised by Mr. Yoon, which is the point that there's this broad range somewhere between ordinary negligence and intentionality. And Mr. Yoon's position, it sounds like, is that anything this side of ordinary negligence is necessarily gross negligence. I don't see how that can be when White versus Hansen uses the phrase all but intentional, which makes it sound as if gross negligence is a lot closer to intentionality than it is to ordinary negligence. I want to finish by identifying what I think is a problem in this case, particularly in the context of title insurance. If the court finds, in light of these facts, which do suggest confusion and inadvertence, all the witnesses acknowledged that. If in light of these facts, Mile High Title was still grossly negligent, then we're left to wonder, is under what circumstances would a title agent's mistake ever not be gross negligence? I think the expert's testimony is telling in this regard. As Mr. Yoon quoted to you, his testimony that this is not difficult stuff. This should have been easy. And the question is, if that's true, isn't any mistake by a title insurer, especially under circumstances like the ones here, isn't any mistake necessarily grossly negligent? I think that's the question, and I think that's the issue, to put it in context. And
you're saying there are no circumstances in which what a title agent does would be ordinary negligence? How about misspelling somebody's name on the deck page? How about putting down a wrong number someplace? Little mistakes like that don't affect the security interest that the holder has in the property.
Well, may I see I'm out of time.
Let me answer.
Thank you. Your Honor, with respect to those, I think there were questions raised whether that would result in any finding of negligence at all.
I mean, but what you've identified facts which raise a question to for me of whether there would be negligence, period. So, you know, I think there's the distinction is not between negligence and gross negligence with respect to those particular examples. I think the distinction is whether those examples would give rise to any negligence whatsoever. I see I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
That concludes the argument in this case. Court thanks both counsel for their arguments. The case will be deemed submitted, and written opinion will issue in due course.